This is a segment where a lot of talented people from disadvantaged backgrounds get their opportunity to start climbing the job ladder. So getting this segment of the labor market right is quite important for firms, but also for job seekers.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. We all know that if an application process is difficult, time-consuming, or costly, only the most suitable candidates will bother. It's the logic behind the complicated forms for benefits or never-ending job applications that these days seem to swallow up a huge chunk of all our lives. Well, what we all know might be wrong. An experiment in Ethiopia tested our assumptions by offering incentives to candidates if they apply. Stefano Caria of the University of Warwick is one of the researchers. Stefano, welcome to VoxDev Talks.
Hello, Tim. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Probably everyone listening to this has had the experience of filling in a ridiculously complicated application for a job or a visa or for some benefit. It just never seems to end. What's the logic behind this ordeal?
Let me start by saying that what I'm going to talk about today is joint work with Guillaume Abebe at the World Bank Ethiopia and Esteban Ortiz Ospina at our World in Data.
Yes.
Now, onto your question, Tim. The logic behind this ordeal mechanism is that people have some idea of whether they are suitable for particular jobs. And when they decide whether to apply for a position or not, they will weigh the probability of being offered the job against the cost of the application. If you raise this cost high enough, only the people who know they are a good match for the position and hence who think that they stand a good chance to get the job will find it worthwhile to apply. In other words, the higher the cost, the more you're going to force people to select on the basis of the information that they have about their own quality. If applying for a position does not cost much, then it may make sense to apply even if you know that you are unlikely to get the position. You may just give it a try. And in this way, high application costs are meant to help firms select a pool of high quality candidates.
So it's basically it deters time wasters, I suppose. But in your case, you turn this on its head, don't you? You start from the assumption that the cost of applying for a job may be higher for the best applicants. What's the intuition?
That's right. The logic that I've just presented rests on the assumption that the cost of the application is the same for all potential applicants. Or at least, if different people face different costs, this ordeal argument requires that these heterogeneous costs are uncorrelated with the ability of potential applicants. But in our project, as you say, we do start from a different assumption. And our argument is quite simple. Suppose that indeed, in the labor market, application costs are heterogeneous, but uncorrelated with ability. So you have low-cost individuals and high-cost individuals of different ability. Now, low-cost, high-ability individuals will be able to search at very high intensity, and much higher intensity in particular than individuals who have the same ability but face higher application costs. And as a result, over time, these low-cost, high-ability individuals will find jobs faster than their high-cost peers with similar ability. The high-cost, high-ability people, on the other hand, will keep searching for work, and thus, over time, they will become overrepresented in the pool of job seekers. If you think about low-ability individuals, a similar logic is likely to apply. So those who face high costs may drop out of the formal labor market altogether, and those who face low costs may try their luck for a little longer. So these two forces means that overall, among job seekers, we are likely to find a positive correlation between application costs and worker ability. And if this is indeed the case, then the ordeal logic that we have just discussed falls apart. And in this new scenario, it is now by no means guaranteed that higher application costs are going to help firms select better candidates. They may actually, in fact, lead to firms attracting lower cost applicants who have, on average, lower ability.
Now, you tested this ingenious idea in Ethiopia. And does local data support your intuition about this correlation?
Yes, it does. Our most convincing piece of evidence comes from an experiment that we ran with a local employer in Addis Ababa, which is the capital of Ethiopia. In this experiment, the employer randomizes, when they advertise a certain position, whether they offer potential applicants a small financial incentive to apply for the position. This is a sum of money that will be given to the applicant if they visit the application center, take the selection test, and deposit their application materials. So it's basically a way to reduce application costs, to reimburse these application costs. And what we show is that when the employer offers this incentive, they are able to attract better applicants. We also provide some additional evidence on these questions using a high-frequency panel, which tracks the job search decisions of a sample of young Ethiopians over the course of a year. We can document precisely this dynamic selection argument, which generates the positive correlation between cost and ability. We can do this because this panel has data on job search over time, but also includes some good proxies for application costs using savings and distance from the city center. And we proxy ability with a score on a Raven test, a basic test of aptitude. And what we find is that at the start of the panel, when many individuals have just joined the labor market, there is only a small, insignificant correlation between application cost and ability. But this correlation grows over time for the sample of people who are looking for work for the reasons I've just discussed. In particular, the probability of finding work is higher for low-cost, high-ability job seekers compared to job seekers who have similar ability but higher cost, and as a result, the latter become overrepresented over time.
In your experiment that you used to test this, what sort of job offer did you make?
It's an offer for a clerical position. So this is a job that includes data entry and some basic accounting tasks. What we wanted was a position roughly in the middle of the skills distribution. So this would be a position that would require a certain level of skills. That selecting candidates with those skills and abilities would matter to the employer. However, it's not a top professional job either, because that would not have been representative of the labor market most workers typically participate in.
And to test your hypothesis, did you go through the entire recruitment procedure and end up giving someone a job?
Yes, indeed. In fact, let me give you some more information about the design of the experiment. In Addis Ababa, which is where we ran this experiment, positions are typically advertised on physical job boards and in newspapers. The job ads that are posted on these boards and in the newspapers give a generic description of the position and indicate a phone number that you can call if you'd like to find out about the application process. So in the experiment, we replicate this job posting procedure. Our partner employer, who is a real employer in Addis Ababa, puts out an ad, and then some trained staff reply to the phone calls of interested job seekers. Once people call, we randomize them into one of three experimental conditions. There is a control group where the job seeker is offered a base wage and no application incentive. There is the incentive group where the job seeker is offered the base wage and this financial application incentive. And there is this third group, the high wage group. And here applicants are offered a higher wage for the same job, but no initial financial application incentive. We then measure carefully the ability of the people that apply in each one of these three conditions. And the employer then invites the top applicants for an interview, takes their pick, and actually employs them.
And how do you measure that ability?
So to measure ability, we use a battery of pre-specified measures, which cover several of the standardized personnel selection tests that are quite popular with firms worldwide. In particular, we measure cognitive ability using a Raven test, which is a measure of problem-solving ability, and a Stroop test, which measures executive function, which roughly means the ability to focus on one task, suppressing stimuli related to other tasks. We also measure non-cognitive skills using standardized psychometric scales, such as the Big Five and GRIT, so your ability to persevere through difficult situations, or your conscientiousness, your ability to respond in an emotionally imbalanced way to difficult situations and so on. And finally, we include measures of job-specific experience. The effects that I talked about before when I said that the incentive enables the employer to attract better applicants actually refer only to cognitive skills. That's where we document our strongest impacts. We do not document impacts on non-cognitive skills and on job-specific experience.
Yes, now talking about this impact, did you find that any types of applicants responded particularly well to this application incentive that you were offering?
Yes, impacts were actually stronger among women, among job seekers that were currently unemployed, and among inexperienced job seekers, so people who did not have much work experience before. Now, this heterogeneity result is important because it corroborates the hypothesis that the incentive is attracting a pool of job seekers who are talented but face high labor market participation costs. For example, the types of job seekers that the incentive attracts are typically poorer than the counterfactual applicant that the employer attracted in the control condition, and as a result, they find it harder to pay for the cost of transportation required to meet the employer. The heterogeneity is particularly striking with respect to gender. A key result is that the application incentive doubles the proportion of women among top applicants for the position. This is quite important, we think. Unfortunately, here we do not have the data to further unpack why labor market participation may be so costly for women, but I'm actually exploring this question in work in Egypt with Bruno Crepon, Abderrahman Naji, and Caroline Kraft, where we study the impacts of childcare support on female employment.
So, of course, the big question, Stefano, does this mean that employers offering this incentive would recruit a better applicant?
Yes, indeed. Now, we do not perform any statistical analysis on this question, since the sample would be too small, though qualitatively we do know that the employer is happier with the hires that they made from the incentive pool of applicants. However, statistically, what we can say is that we do find impacts at the very top of the distribution of applicant ability, suggesting that these effects can lead to better hires.
I was thinking about this and I thought, well, hang on, if you get this incentive too big, then that's going to have the opposite effect, isn't it? Because everybody's going to want to apply. Do you know what the optimum size for an incentive is so that you get a high quality applicant, but it's also manageable?
This is an important question, of course. We do not quite have experimental evidence on this question, since we only experimented with one level of application incentive. One useful piece of guidance we can give, however, is that you do not want to offer an incentive that is larger than the cost of the application of your typical applicant for precisely the reasons you've just given. So our estimates suggested that the incentive we offered covered about half of the application cost of the typical applicant, and this is why the size was probably appropriate to attract poor, constrained applicants who would not have been able to apply otherwise, but not to attract the wrong applicants that you're referring to who would not have been interested in the job and would have only showed up to collect the incentive.
What about the type of job here? Does this effect just work for a job that, as you say, had some status and required some skills? Or can it apply to the application process for any type of job?
The key ingredient, in my view, is that you need a labor market where people face different levels of application costs and where the people who face the highest costs are the best applicants.
Yes.
Now, I suspect that this will mostly be true in labor markets for positions in the middle of the skill distribution, like the one we have selected for this experiment. These are jobs that attract applicants with a wide variety of backgrounds, which means that even the same application process can have very different effective costs for different applicants. So, for example, an application process that requires you to pay some transport costs will have a very different effective cost for poorer and richer applicants. I also think that this is a particularly interesting segment of the labor market to look at, as this is a segment where probably a lot of the upward mobility occurs. That is, where a lot of talented people from disadvantaged backgrounds get their opportunity to start climbing the job ladder. So getting this segment of the labor market right is quite important for firms, but also for job seekers.
I believe you also asked managers in this case about whether they thought this was a good idea, and they didn't really believe your idea would work. And I'm sure most recruiters anywhere in the world would be a little bit skeptical about this at first. What can you do to change their conventional wisdom in this case?
This is indeed a very important point. As you mentioned in the paper, we interviewed a sample of recruiters who did not take part in the experiment, and we had them forecast the results of the experiment. And what we found was that indeed, the average recruiter expected that the incentive would backfire. It would actually decrease outcome. So they were wrong. Now, whether you can change this conventional wisdom or not is really an open question. We have some interesting evidence on this point from Ghana, and there we show that employers respond to negative signals about worker trust by changing their beliefs, but do not respond to positive signals about workers' trustworthiness. So this asymmetry suggests that changing negative views about workers may actually be quite harder than many would expect.
I suppose there is a potential process, isn't there, that if people offering these incentives recruit better workers, then you'd imagine that there is a process by which that would spread, but that might take a while.
That's right. Also, you can get an equilibrium where nobody offers these types of incentives, and so you get, as it were, stuck there. There are some labor markets where actually you are in the opposite equilibrium and reimbursing application incentives is the norm. In some cases, for example, in Germany, it's even mandated by law. So in a sense, it seems that the labor market can converge on different equilibria. And when it converges on the equilibria where application costs are not reimbursed, this has the negative implications that we've just discussed.
Stefano, that's very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim. It was my pleasure.
The paper we've been talking about is called The Selection of Talent, Experimental and Structural Evidence from Ethiopia. And the authors are Girma Bebi, Stefano Caria and Esteban Ortiz Ospina. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. If you enjoyed it, subscribe on your podcast platform. You'll never miss an episode. And you can find past episodes at voxdev.org.